Have you ever wondered how many times you've crossed paths with an animal but haven't noticed them? They can seem so distant in our more urban areas, yet they're closer than you'd think. In cities, alongside us, even sharing similarities with our beloved fluffy buddy, Rover, our pets that is. Coyotes are all around us, yet the narrative surrounding this species is often so skewed. Today, we're joined by Dr. Stan Gert, professor of wildlife ecology at Ohio State University. With over 100 peer-reviewed publications and his 23-year-long Chicago study uncovering remarkable insights from monitoring 1,500 coyotes, Dr. Gert is here to answer all of our questions about this species that is really so familiar yet elusive to urban communities. Join us as Stan shares his captivating journey from first encounters to conservation efforts in this inaugural episode of a three-part series aimed at rewriting the age-old coyote narrative that we've all become quite familiar with. Stay tuned until the end of the episode for a special discount code for Stan's newest book, Coyotes Among Us. Welcome to the Wild Foundation podcast short format series, Conservation Capsule. Imagine being able to quickly take a capsule, a pill, a dose of something that helps you retain crucial insight in the realm of nature conservation. Well, we've got just that for you. Through our Conservation Capsule series, we're handing you the effective dosage of words of wisdom from the environmental world's best and brightest. Let's dive in. Okay, we are so excited to have you here with us, Stan. Thank you so much for being part of our capsule series. We cannot wait to hear a little bit more about what you do, the world that you're in, and why you care so deeply about, well, what you're going to tell us about. So can you set the stage for us, set the stage for the audience? Tell us a little bit about what you work so hard to protect and why.
Sure. Well, I think what I work on for the most part are mammalian wildlife, so species that I'm especially interested in. So within that world, it's a lot of mammalian carnivore species. That's kind of my expertise. Although I'm not restricted to those, I've worked a lot with bats. Bats deserve a lot of attention and a lot of conservation, but I'm most interested in that mammalian world and trying to protect species that are threatened by different factors, or in some cases may be threatened by just the misperceptions that people may have about them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, you know, mammalian carnivores, that's a very interesting topic of research and just species to focus on. A lot of your research has been focused around understanding, I pronounce it coyotes, but I know that there's a lot of different ways to say it. Is coyotes right? Can I just stick to that, or should I do coyotes?
Yeah. You're fine. You're okay. In the majority, and fortunately, both are correct. So we can both call them whatever we want, and it works fine. But it's good to get that out in front, because people will be questioning that. It's like, why are they saying that?
I know. Well, so because I've heard it, I'm from the East Coast, and I know that we had chatted about this a little bit before we started recording, but I'm from the East Coast, and, you know, coyotes are just a very regular, the Northeast, I'll say that. They're a very regular occurrence in just when you grow up there. You know, they're always around. Everybody's like, don't leave your small dogs outside, bring them inside. You never know if the pack of coyotes is going to come. So that's just how I've always said it in my life and, you know, kind of my base understanding of coyotes. So I'm so excited to hear from you about what exactly a coyote is. You know, dog, mini wolf dog, like what are we looking at here? And can you give us just like an understanding of what this animal that has gained so much popularity and has become so urban, what is it really?
Right. Well, so as I mentioned, I do work with some other things, but coyotes especially are really fascinating and very unique. And so that's probably, hopefully, some of the things we'll be able to convey to people as we talk about them. But what makes them so special? Well, first of all, what are they? Well, they are a member of the dog family. So that's what we call the canidae. That includes wolves, coyotes, foxes, and jackals. Of that group, you know, coyotes are kind of our own unique North American canid species. So wolves and some foxes are found in other continents and around the world. The coyotes are pretty much the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and they do go down into Central America. But they've been with us for, we don't know exactly how long, but because there were some other prehistoric canids running around and they looked very similar to coyotes, so we don't know exactly when they split off, but it was a long time ago. So at least a million years, probably. So they've been on this planet, in this continent, for a very long time, way before humans were ever here. So that's the first bit. They're also medium-sized canids, so they're not the largest, they're not the smallest. They're right in the middle, and that's actually a really important key to their success. Being in the middle is actually really good ecologically, if you want to talk about evolutionary races, because it allows them to exploit the largest number of niches and that type of thing. So there's other aspects to it as well. I won't go into all of that, but that's kind of what we're looking at, is kind of like your dog-like animal. They're like very closely related to dogs. Dogs are wolves. A lot of people don't realize that your Chihuahua, your Sheltie, which is what we have running around here, that's a wolf genetically. Coyotes are different. They share an ancestor with wolves. They can interbreed with wolves, which means they can also interbreed with dogs. And so occasionally you will hear terms like a coy wolf or a coy dog. Those are real things, but they're often not what people think. So, but they can interbreed with those others, but they're their own distinct species, and they have been for a very long time.
Wow. The next time somebody criticizes my 12-pound Chihuahua, I am going to be like, you're looking at a wolf right there. You just watch.
Well, no, but your Chihuahua is an example of how what humans do to wolves.
Yeah. Yeah, make them, well, in my case, she has an underbite and all of that stuff, so.
Yeah, right. That's
quite.
That's what, that's the human effect,
yeah,
there,
yeah.
Right.
So can you tell us a little bit more about your first encounter with this species? And I know you've got a story here, because you started telling me a little bit about it, and now I really want to dive into that. Your first real time working with this species, and what got you so hooked to, you know, spending so much time understanding this animal?
Right. Well, okay, so that's actually, so there's two different questions there. So one is like, what's my first experience with coyotes and what got me interested in them? And then what's my first experience professionally as part of my research, that when we embarked on this really long project that we're doing? And both of them are interesting. I'll just give you one little nugget in terms of my own personal background and my relationship with them. And that is that as a small boy, I grew up in Kansas, a little tiny town, little small town in rural Kansas. And when I was a boy, I was in the Boy Scouts, and my father took me on just a father-son camping trip. It was a big deal to me, but I think we literally just walked a couple miles outside of town and we camped overnight. But I was about 10 years old or so. We were on our hike. We were walking along, and I would see these scats or these tracks. So I would ask him, what are these things? And he said, that's from coyotes. And I said, coyotes. And in Kansas in the 1980s, that was the biggest predator we had. And so for a boy, that was kind of a big deal. And I kept asking, well, where are they? He goes, oh, they're around. You just don't see them. And we would take this hike along the way, and I was fascinated. I would see occasional sign from them. We eventually camped that night, and at the campfire, just the two of us, I asked him about the coyotes. I said, where are they? He goes, well, they're here. And I said, where are they? And he goes, well, let's howl. Let's see if they respond. And so he howled, and all of a sudden, there were responses like all around us. There were coyotes howling. It started with just one or two, and it started over on one side, then another side. And all of a sudden, there's this chorus of coyote howls around us at night. And that was just the most amazing experience, that these animals I couldn't see were right there with us. And so even today, when I hear coyotes howl, you know, it makes me think of my dad. So anyway, so that's the personal side. On the professional side, though, I always wanted to work with coyotes. And as I became a professional and began working on research on different animals, it didn't look like I was ever going to actually get to work with them, especially when I ended up over in Chicago. I was working on urban wildlife. And again, this is in the early 1990s when there was not much in the way of urban wildlife studies going on. That was not really a hot topic at that time. In the first, we actually got reports of coyotes beginning to appear in the Chicago area. And we eventually began a study to understand what are coyotes doing in one of the largest metropolitan areas in North America. And we assumed that they didn't really belong there. We assumed that they were only there because they were mistakes, basically. And we thought we would do a one-year study, and it would be over in no time, and we would barely be able to catch any animals. But we were able to capture one animal, the first animal, the very first animal, and that animal taught me all kinds of lessons in the very first night of tracking her. So the short bit of that story, I can go into what there's at least four or five things she taught me in that first night. But the bottom line.
Please tell us. Please share. I want to hear, because, you know, this is like opening the can of worms of people didn't think that urban wildlife was really a thing. And look at where we are now, you know,
right.
I live in Boulder, Colorado too. So it's a little different. We have wildlife that comes in all the time, but it feels like this was really the beginning of an eye-opening journey, you know?
Well, and it also, yeah, and it's going to be, it's a theme that has persisted throughout 20 plus year study. So
right.
From that one night, so again, this is back in 2000. So this is, again, a relatively rare circumstance to be able to radio track a coyote in Chicago. We caught her in a large natural park. It's one of the largest parks available. We assumed that that was the only place where coyotes could live. It would have to be in a really large protected area, protected from us, and they would be restricted to that area. And that's really the only place where coyotes could live. We assumed a lot of things. That was our knowledge back then. And so we caught her there at the very edge of that park. And when I couldn't wait. So I tracked her that first night. And I just wanted to make sure that the equipment was functioning right, correctly and everything. But I was just so excited. It was just, I couldn't believe after so many years, we're actually going to be able to study a coyote. And I got to the park and I started with the receiver listening to her signal, and it wasn't there. Wasn't there. I went to another part of the park. Her signal wasn't there. I went to another part. It was not there. I thought it failed. We put a bad collar on or something, and I was getting really depressed. But then I flipped the antenna around eventually toward the urban part outside of the park, and that's where her signal was coming from. And so then I left the park and I followed her signal, and she took me through the streets, through neighborhoods, and through places where I did not think coyotes were existing or where they were able to even cross certain roads. And so that was the first eye-opening experience, was that, wow, she's crossing roads I didn't think coyotes would be able to do. And she's clearly using spaces that are also being used by people. And she's doing it at night, and people don't realize this. I eventually came up to her signal where she was localized. It got very loud. I turned the corner. This is about midnight at night. And I'm in this residential area right next to an interstate. I turn the corner, and there's three men standing on the curb pointed into this lot, but they all have leashes. And the leashes all go out into the lot, and they're all dog walkers, and they're letting their dogs relieve themselves. But she is just about 10 yards away from them, but they don't know that. Neither they or the dogs know that she's there. And they see me coming up, but my headlights were shining right on them. And I realized, oh, okay, so they don't know she's there. And this is a good example of how there's coexistence occurring, but without people knowing it. And in fact, there's a lot of close proximity between coyotes and people, and none of us have any idea that this is going on. So that was a few lessons. The extent, the range that she went, I had no idea they were able to do that. Crossing the roads, I didn't think they could do that. Existing right next to people and their pets without a conflict, without the people knowing it, I didn't know how often that was going to occur. So those were all of the things that I learned. And then, of course, the more practical lesson I learned was that I completely underestimated the budget for the project, because I was going to have to travel a whole lot more than I ever expected. So, and of course, because there's coyotes occurring in areas that we didn't realize, that meant that there's probably way more coyotes out there than what we thought. And so, again, we're probably going to have to expand the study. So that was after one night. And the bottom line, and this is going to be the constant theme, and it stayed with me throughout, was that we completely underestimated them. And she taught me to be humble, and that there's a lot of humility whenever you're trying to study coyotes in particular. So they always show you that you don't know what you think you know. And they always show you that you're constantly underestimating them.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that it brings up such an interesting, everything you're saying is so fascinating, because we write these narratives about coyotes, but about tons of different species, right? And we put assumptions on how they act and where they move and how they interact with us. And so often we're wrong. And the survival of these species depends on basically on us being wrong, right? Because they're, I don't want to use the word sneaky, but like the fact that that coyote was there, the people didn't know, the dogs didn't know, and yet they're surviving, right? It's just fascinating to think that we've written these narratives to kind of vilify these animals and many other animals too, when that's really a very narrow lens to analyze them through, because there is so much we can learn from them. So, I mean, thank you for setting the stage with that, because I can't even imagine how much your mind was blown in that just one night of being like, oh my goodness, I was wrong on so many fronts. We have so much to learn here. But then I cannot wait, and I know that this will be for our next episode together, but I cannot wait to learn more about how these animals have adapted and dive into that more, because one of the questions that popped up into my head, I was like, well, where do they, this sounds so silly, but where do they sleep? Like, if they're in a totally urban area, like, where do they sleep? You know?
That's what we were asking too. We had no idea. We thought it would be in this nice big green park. And there were clearly coyotes living there. I mean, there's plenty of coyotes living in those large big green. That's the prime real estate. But they're not restricted to that. And there's these amazing coyotes. They're living in areas that have no green spaces.
Yeah.
Like, where do they sleep? Where do they go? What do they eat? We had no idea.
Yeah. It's amazing. So I know you kind of, you left us with a really interesting nugget there at the end of your story of just how wrong we can be in the assumptions that we make. Is there any other, I think that was a fabulous tidbit and to, you know, a capsule of knowledge for us to walk away with. But is there anything else that you'd like us to come away with from this episode with, at least to, you know, because I know this is a series, we're going to dive in a lot deeper, and I cannot wait for our audience to hear more about your research and more about everything that you've learned. But just from this first episode, if you really had to boil it down to one thing, what would you like us to walk away with?
Right. So I've thought about that. I think for this one, then this will be like, I think I mentioned, this will come up over and over again. And I do believe that humility is a really important aspect to conservation and understanding that there are many things that we don't really understand. And you mentioned that we create these narratives and we do the best we can. This isn't a criticism of people. It's not a criticism of biologists or the public. We do the best we can, but there's so much out there that's mysterious, and we need to recognize sometimes we don't know everything, and we can learn from the animals, we can learn from nature, and then make the proper decisions and the proper responses based off of that.
That's so well said. I love that, because we are constantly learning, and I think that's also part of why we felt so compelled to create this podcast, because I mean, we started this podcast with how do I pronounce the word? Do I say coyote? Do I say coyote? Do I whatever, you know? So we're constantly learning and we have to be open to that. So thank you so much for sharing that with us and for just reminding us of that, that it takes a little humility and to be humble and accepting of what we don't know yet and really being receptive to learning throughout the process. So Stan, thank you so much. We will absolutely be catching up with you again so soon, and we cannot wait. This is going to be a great story for everybody to follow. Thank you.
Great. You'll have a hard time setting me up. If you can't tell, I love talking about those animals.
Oh, I love it. I love the enthusiasm. I mean, maybe four episodes isn't enough. Maybe we'll just keep on going. I mean, and like, you know, you never know. As you keep learning, we're just going to keep checking in, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, that's perfect. So thank you.
You bet.
Want to learn more about Stan's work? Use the code VOICES20 on IndiePubs for 20% off Stan's new book, Coyotes Among Us. You can also use the discount link provided in the episode description wherever you're listening to this podcast. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Find us on social media through the Wild Foundation or through our website, wild.org. And hey, if you're feeling inspired, don't hesitate to share this podcast with those around you, and maybe even rate us on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts. We appreciate the support more than you know, and it's that support that allows our work to continue and evolve.